The Conference Committee on the Omnibus Public Safety Policy Bill will come to order. We do have quorum on both sides present. Members, to the members from the House, my apologies for not being here for our first meeting. We called the meeting, and then I was had to present a bill that went on a little bit too long, but I understand that under Representative Hillstrom's leadership, we were able to get through, and that has allowed us to move forward on the work that we needed to do. So I thank you for doing the work, even in my absence. Representative Hillstrom and I think based on the side-by-side walkthrough, members have had an opportunity to understand what's in the both bills. So today, Representative Hillstrom and I had an opportunity to meet, and we today we'd like to present to you our chair's proposal for your consideration, and I believe that you have that in front of you. I will ask counsel to walk us through the section by section of the chair's proposal, and then at the unless somebody has an issue with what's on the sheet for proposal, it's our intention, I think, to go through, do what we need to do it, and we'd like to do one motion at the end to adopt these provisions. If individuals have concerns about specific provisions that we're proposing to you, we at the end, we can take them out and take that as a separate vote, if that is what the committee members would like. So any questions, members? Do you all have this document? And we will take it from the side by side. Mr. Backus?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So again, this chart, I believe everyone has a copy of it. It's called Agreement Regarding Conference Committee Report for HF 1301, Senate File 993. And what this chart does is it goes article by article, and if something is mentioned in here specifically, that would be part of the final agreement, part of the conference committee report. So if something is not mentioned in here, that means it wouldn't be part of that. And if perhaps at the final amendment, or the final vote, if you could defer to maybe staff to tweak the article structure and the effective dates if need be for these provisions. So then starting with House Article 1, Predatory Offenders, there were three House provisions, Sections 2, 3, and 6, which I believe are Representative Bigham provisions relating to predatory offenders and social networking sites. There's an amendment for that, and there are three amendments that should be part of this packet that I think were handed out separately. So the amendment here is the A-12 amendment, and the original House language had two sections, Sections 2 and 3. Section 2, I believe, defined terms, social networking sites and chat rooms, and then Section 3 required as part of the predatory offender registration law that a predatory offender who was on ISR would not be able to access these sites, and violation of that would be a 5-year felony. This amendment, the A-12 amendment, basically does a very similar thing, but it restructures it somewhat. It takes the ISR statute, which was being amended by the House in Section 6, and it maintains the House language, which authorizes unannounced searches of computers and electronic devices capable of accessing the Internet. But it also adds to that a provision that for a predatory offender who is being placed on ISR as a condition of the release, the Commissioner of Corrections is required to prohibit the inmate from accessing these type of sites, social networking sites and instant messaging or chat room programs. So that would be prohibited under the ISR conditions of release unless the intensive release agent would give the specific advance approval to access certain sites. So that's the A-12 amendment. Continuing then.
Mr. Backus, Representative Bingham, do you have any thoughts on the A-12 amendment since this is your bill?
Yep. Madam Chair, I just want to thank counsel and you, Madam Chair, and my chair for having the discussion. This is, I think, a very good policy to enact and to follow, and I hope that we have member support on it. And I appreciate the work that went into it, and I think this will get at the protection that we're needing. And based on some of the news releases or news stories that have come out recently regarding some of the social networking websites and some of the solicitation and that of minors and people in general. I think this is a very good step in the right direction for it. So I thank you both for all of you for your work to help me with coming up with the good verbiage on it.
We're happy that we were able to work out the A12 amendment. Any discussions from members? Senator Higgins.
You're going to hate me, Madam Chair. I move to delete the comma on line 1.31 and change the semicolon to a comma on 1.32.
Senator Higgins, we'll just incorporate that into the amendment. And when we make the final adoption at the end of the presentation, we'll just incorporate all the changes.
It's a curse, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, but it's what I do.
I'm assuming that Representative Bingham does not object to that change. Next, Mr. Backus.
Madam Chair, members, and continuing, there was a house-only provision, Section 4 of Article 1, that dealt with housing with services establishments. The Senate would accept that provision. House Sections 7 and 8, and I'm going to go pretty fast unless you want me to linger here, deal with regional treatment centers, which are now defined as residential facilities in the Predatory Offender Registration Law, and there's training materials. There's a house-only provision that we're accepting. Senate Section 43, which is a Senate-only provision dealing with the definition of sexual contact, there's an amendment in packets, which is the A4 amendment. This is an amendment that's basically proposed by the advocates, and it changes the language around. The Senate changed this provision in committee to make it more grammatically accurate, but in so doing, it would limit the bodily fluids involved to that of the actors. So this would kind of flip that a little bit, and it would be any bodily fluids.
Any questions from members on the A4 amendment? Mr. Backus?
Madam Chair, then, House Section 9, both the House and Senate had provisions relating electronic solicitation of children. This would accept the House version of that. Continuing then to Article 2, House Section 3 related to providing notice for criminal sexual conduct victims. That would be included in the report. Next, there are identical provisions on domestic abuse warrantless arrest time. Those are being adopted. And then the Senate provision on the domestic fatality review teams would be adopted. Article 3, then, the report would include the House policy on disproportionate minority contact, House Section 1, the identical provisions relating to the Fourth Judicial District misdemeanor violations and the conciliation court referees, the Senate position regarding the license reinstatement diversion pilot program, and then the House repeal relating to the obsolete Bloomington Municipal Court.
Excuse me, Mr. Backus.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hailstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Backus. We also had some discussion about allowing the diversion pilot program to be for any county that wanted to, if you could make certain to.
Madam Chair, there's actually an amendment to that that Senator Higgins has, if you'd want to offer that perhaps or act on that.
Where is the only language I had, I gave to you. Do we have it? Do you have it?
I have it.
I think Senator Higgins had talked to us about that, and so members, unless somebody has an objection, Representative Hailstrom and I have talked about this language. It's permissive language to allow the commissioner to allow other cities to do this. I don't think it's problematic. Senator Higgins, do you have anything to add to that?
No, several cities were listed in the provision, and I just thought if there were other cities who wanted to, like my city, it would be an opportunity to do that rather than just adding my city, and I thought this might work.
Unless members object, the A7 amendment will be, what do I call that, incorporated into the proposal or the recommendations. Mr. Backus?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That takes us to Article 4. First off, there are House and Senate identical provisions relating to the criminal/traffic offender surcharge. They would be adopted. Senate sections 13 to 15 were Senate-only provisions regarding apprehension and detention orders for CPO counties. That would be part of the report. The identical provisions relating to the apprehension and detention orders for CCA counties would be included. House Section 4 was a provision relating to correctional facilities. If they merge, the workers would be able to keep their vacation and sick time. House Section 5 would be included. This relates to the arrest authority for juvenile detainees. There were House and Senate provisions that were different. We would accept the House position. This part is not in the chart, but I'd like to read it in. It somehow got deleted from the chart. How Section 7 related to evidence-based probation practices would be included. Next is how Section 8, which is their repealer, with the addition of including a repealer of Minnesota Statutes 244.195 Subdivision 5, which is related to the Senate changes in 13 to 15. Madam Chair, then continuing Article 5, the House first two provisions on specialized emergency response teams would be included. The House position on methamphetamine precursor drugs, with the exception that the Senate retention time of 3 years would be as part of that. House Sections 4 and 22 relating to Board of Pharmacy reporting would be included. House Section 6 relating to GPS devices. Senate Section 12 relating to aggravating factors in sentencing. Senate Sections 18 and 57 relating to the Financial Crimes Task Force reorganization. House Section 12 relating to unsafe toys. The four Senate provisions relating to hiring requirements would be included. Senate Section 10 relating to limitation on admissibility of evidence relating to criminal histories would be included.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the limitation on admissibility of evidence, it's my understanding that the governor's office was looking for a couple of word changes to other.
I can read it if you want.
Mr. Backus.
Madam Chair, I could read that. It would be on page R54 of the side-by-side Senate language, line 10.33. If you delete members of the public and you replace that with others, that way it would include more clearly include co-workers and people like that.
If there are no objections from the members, the chairs would incorporate that into the proposal. Let's proceed, Mr. Backus.
Continuing, Madam Chair, Senate Section 11, the Minnesota Racing Commission license exception, and then the identical provisions relating to the public employment consideration of criminal records issue. The House Section 15, the merger of the police agencies and the vacation time issue would be included. Senate language on Section 45, the trespass, however, without the additional Senate affirmative defense. So it would just be the House position on the affirmative defense. The three identical provisions on the post-board housekeeping changes would be included, as would the identical provisions on the unauthorized law enforcement practices. Senate Section 53 relating to the statute of limitations for criminal sexual conduct involving minors would be included. And then, if you recall, there were two House-only provisions, one related to driver's license records for DWIs, and then another required an RFP for the new alcohol detection device. These would be replaced by the A5 amendment, which basically just authorizes the two chairs here of the policy committees to convene a working group to study and potentially change laws on this issue.
And members, do you have the A5 amendment?
That should be in your
packets. Your packets.
It's on the back of the A4.
It's on the back of the A4. If there are no objections, the chairs will incorporate the A5 amendment into the proposal.
It's right here. And then, Madam Chair, continuing then, Article 6, there are a number of identical provisions. It would be House Sections 1 to 25, Senate Sections 1, 5, 6, 16, 17, 19 to 35, 42, 46, and 54. Those would be incorporated. There's a Senate-only provision, Section 4, dealing with the BCA reorganization change in terms of statutes, Section 84.027, and then finally the House repealer in Section R26. Madam Chair, that's the entire document right there.
Any questions on any of the specific proposals? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could Council expand a little on Article 4, House 8? Trying to understand whether the Senate repealer for the sunset on the conditional release program is in or is it out? I thought it was in, was my understanding.
Mr. Backus?
Madam Chair, members, that's not in this proposal. The Senate repealer got pulled into the conference committee here simply because it matched up with a House repealer. So the provisions related to the conditional release are not part of this. Presumably that's going to be addressed in the other conference committee where your language is.
So considered separate subject matter, Madam Chair.
Right. I think that when we it got pulled in here, but it's being considered as part of the substantive discussion in the budget bill.
Well, to those of you, Madam Chair, who are on that committee, I am not, and I'm hopeful that you'll all stick up for my provision. It's important. So, thank you.
Both chairs are sitting right here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Madam Chair, and all other chairs here, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any further discussions on the chair's proposal? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding the governor's office has come to see me regarding the Senate proposal on Section 3, 7, 8, and 36, and I would at least like to take some public testimony on that, Chair. On the back under Article 5. It's the hiring requirements for the Commissioner of Administration, MNSCU, University of Minnesota, and statutory and homeroom charter cities.
And so just for the record, no one's come to talk to me that this section is problematic. Senator Higgins has said this bill, I think it's Senator Higgins' bill. I mean, I know it's Senator Higgins' bill. This bill has been out there for quite a while, been through the committee process. We passed it off of the Senate floor with a very strong bipartisan vote, I believe, if not even unanimous. We should pull the vote, no?
Wasn't unanimous, but was bipartisan.
Yeah, a strong bipartisan vote, and I think Senator Higgins did not hear any opposition to it, I believe, up until today. So I would be very interested in hearing what the context of the opposition is.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that the House also has had a proposal that has been going through the committee process, and I believe that it's in finance.
Yes.
Is that correct currently? I'm sorry, pardon me?
Representative Champion is the author in the House.
That is correct. I believe that Representative Champion's is slightly more narrow, but it has been moving in the House.
Ms. Rhodes, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Rhodes, and the first thing I will tell you is that everything that was stated is correct about us not being involved in the bill. First of all, the original bill did not affect us, and that's why we did not track it as tightly. And we, frankly, it's hard to track every department, and we normally don't track. You usually don't see me at your committee hearing. So I'll take the rap for that. It was my fault, and my boss is back here hearing just what I'm telling you. The other thing I might mention is that, and if I don't say it, you probably will, it's permissive language. And that is also another factor why we weren't quite sure. The concerns that we have are basically it sets a legislative precedent, and in this tough economic times, it may be a little bit difficult. But I have Commissioner Badgerow here to speak to you, if it's okay, Madam Chair.
That would be great. I would love to hear from somebody.
And by the way, I should tell you that next week will be her last week as she's leaving the department, in case you didn't know.
Now, why did you have to tell me that? Now I have to be nice.
Because Madam Chair, members, I used to be a legislator, and it's like bringing your mother to the thing. We just want to make sure it's right.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members.
Senator Higgins?
If people are looking for the language, it's on R52 of the side-by-side.
Commissioner.
And members, my name is Dana Badger. I'm the Commissioner of Administration. I actually have Brenda Willard here from our procurement operation who could get into even greater detail, but former Representative Rhodes is correct. This only came to my attention here in just the last week or so. I don't know what discussions have gone on with members of this committee, but we have had extensive discussions with the governor's office today, and so it is kind of to that extent late-breaking news. It is true that the language is permissive, but it does state legislative intent, and we know that when legislative intent is stated, there is at least some expectation that we do our best efforts to implement that intent. So I think it states a public policy about which we have some serious issues. I can just tick them off real quickly if you'd like. We give a number of preferences in contracting by statute, and this would then subordinate those preferences. Those preferences are, of course, women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses. We think a bill will pass that gives veterans preferences, and we believe that this at least confuses that picture with respect to preferences. We think it actually contradicts current policy, which provides for contracting on best value, and best value typically does not include these kinds of issues. we do believe there is a fiscal impact were it to be implemented, the fiscal impact obviously of implementing the rules, and the fiscal impact in the expected additional contract pricing that would be required if we impose this additional requirement on state contractors. We think there may be challenges under the Minnesota Human Rights Act with respect to, for example, inquiring about economic status of the employees of the prospective contractor. I guess in summary, we think the notion deserves some more debate and fleshing out, and I apologize to the extent that we weren't at the table and involved in that debate earlier. Yes, it is permissive, but we believe, and the governor's office has asked us to report to the committee, that it is an extremely problematic provision or set of provisions.
Madam Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I'm trying not to get really cranky at, 4:30 in the afternoon, but it's almost like people are looking for ways to not like this. The whole idea that somehow it conflicts with the veterans' preference in the WMBE, it doesn't. It's got nothing to do with that. It's just saying that if you want to contract with somebody for goods or services, or that if the entity chooses, they can require of the contractor that they make some hiring preferences. It doesn't require them to. If they don't want to, they don't have to. If it comes in at a higher cost, it's unlikely anybody would do that in this economy. But I do know that we have organizations that work with offenders, for example, trying to get them jobs, and I'll bet you that they would come in at some of the lowest costs to get some of the work done. So the idea that somehow this is going to cost money is frankly ludicrous. And the whole best value process, it doesn't interfere with that. It just gives people who are at the bottom of the rung of the ladder in trying to get jobs in a bad economy a way to get ahead to. We've got zillions of dollars in stimulus funds that are coming to this state. And the people who are the least likely to get some help from that are the people who we want to help with this provision. So I'm really unhappy with the perceived problems with this provision, because there frankly shouldn't be any. And if anybody's squeamish about the hiring offenders, they need to get over it.
Any other questions for the commissioner or the witnesses on this issue? Commissioner, I thank you for making the time to come, but I have to say that I am disappointed that even though it just came to your attention within the last week, this is the first time I've seen someone from your office in conference committee on the last day of conference committee. And I think that on things like this, I think people around here know that I'm a chair who prefers to be able to try to work things out, and we've been more than willing to do that. And all the other bills that we've had issues, it's been problematic. And so I'm very disappointed that I didn't have an opportunity to address this head on, and in fact that we have to take it here at the table for a conversation. If Representative Hillstrom was approachable as an ally in this issue to ask to help you to keep this out of the conference committee report, I would hope that even if, Commissioner, you're no longer there, I would hope that the executive branch would know that in the Senate we do have an open-door policy, and whenever the executive branch would like to walk through, we will welcome them. But it seems that members of the Senate seems to not be approachable to the executive branch on issues that they're concerned about. And some of us are going to be here for a long time. So in the future, I hope that we will have an opportunity to have those conversations and that the communication lines are open.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Higgins, do you have you said you just passed it off the floor today, mm-hmm. your provision, and we do have a provision alive in the House. Would you be opposed to continuing to work on that provision as a standalone and continue to work on the issue and talk to these folks about their concerns?
Well, we've had, when I talked to Mr. Rhodes yesterday, he had just one problem with the bill that I said that we could fix, and then what I heard him say was that he thought that it was a good provision other than that one piece. So now there's something else going on, and I think it's appropriate to be in this bill. I would like it to stay here. We can work on it separately as well.
Well, Commissioner, is the
Representative Champion's hands at this point.
The message from you is that you have some concerns about this, but is also the message from the executive branch that there's nothing that can be done to fix the issue?
Well, Madam Chair, I want to go back to your earlier point because I want the record to reflect that this is not typically the way I do business, and I apologize that you were not contacted. Representative Hillstrom was, and I believe we did have conversations with Senator Higgins as well, so I apologize that we left you off that list. We these are recent conversations, though, concededly. All I'm here is I'm conveying a message on behalf of the governor's office. I was asked to come and convey this message on behalf of the governor's office that they find the provision, quote, very concerning. I'm always willing and wanting to work things out. I agree with the public policy. I believe that we should be providing ex-offenders and people at low-income levels opportunities. I don't know exactly the way in which we ought to go about doing it. We have, in the past, worked to help develop contracts with vendors who offer these kinds of services in the cleaning area, for example. So we're more than open to the public policy and the idea. I think it may be in the mechanics that we have some issues. And then granted, of course, it is permissive, but just as a matter of goodwill and good faith, having something permissive that then we're not able, for whatever reason, including fiscal, to implement, it just doesn't set right. And so those are the reasons I think we're here at this late moment. Yes, I guess the answer is we would love to try to work something out. I don't know what it is right off the top of my head.
Well, members, I don't know how to proceed forward with this. I think that Senator Higgins and the Senate has a very strong position on this. This language has been out there for a while, and I think that we should have a discussion on where we want to go with it. I think the Senate's inclination is that we would like to I don't think it'd be defensible from the Senate's perspective for something that we voted on that has passed the Senate floor for us to come back without the provision. Merely because the executive branch has an objection to it at this late hour. I'm open to input.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might actually have 5 minutes with my conferees, given the new testimony that we have heard and the fact that we don't know what we could do to fix this provision to satisfy the judiciary branch. But my one question would be...
The executive branch.
Executive branch, excuse me. Sorry, that's what I meant. My one question would be, in the event that this provision ended up in this bill, would this bill be vetoed by the governor?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and members, I'm certainly not authorized to say that. I gave you the authorized statement, which is that it is very concerning. I think it would give the governor pause. I can't comment on what his final action on the bill, which does have a number of very good provisions in it.
Representative Paymar?
Madam Chair, Petitioner, you talked about the costs related to it. Can you be more specific?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Paymar. First of all, there would be rulemaking required, and we all know the costs associated with rulemaking. But secondly, and we've very quickly discussed this with some of our construction friends, and in particular, I think they are concerned with the quality of the training that might be afforded to some of these people, particularly ex-offenders, and that we don't know for sure whether or not that might not add cost to the contract itself. If limited, however, to certain kinds of contracts, and I think I mentioned earlier, cleaning is one where I think this has been particularly effective in the city of Minneapolis and elsewhere, maybe that's an avenue that we might approach. What are the kinds of contracts for which these kinds of employees are most well-suited? That might be an avenue.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't hear in that any certain costs, with all due respect, Commissioner. The language from the Senate says that the commissioner may adopt rules, but need not adopt rules. And I think that what the Senate is saying is we'd like to head in this direction. We'd like you to look at the types of contracts we do and see if there is an opportunity for this type of rulemaking. It is permissive. There are no costs that we're aware of. And so I'm not sure why we would redirect this whole policy at this point and derail it for a financial reason when there's no fiscal cost here and the rulemaking is completely permissive.
Well, Madam Chair.
Commissioner?
And Senator Ortman, it is correct. There is absolutely no fiscal note because of the permissive nature of this. But, you know, as I stated earlier, I believe this does state clearly legislative intent for which we would feel at least a good faith requirement to do our best to implement. So I think were we to implement it, I believe there would be costs associated with implementing it.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Commissioner, though, over the next year, the departments that might be impacted here could come back with a plan, with some refinements, with some suggestions to maybe help us to implement new policy that would create an opportunity to do this type of contracting. Isn't that correct? It could be the opportunity that we would like you to take to look at it.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, that's a point very well taken.
Senator Higgins?
And Madam Chair, you know, the stimulus funds that we've gotten this year for transportation projects, for example, we all know that there are skilled labor positions and unskilled labor positions in a big project like 35W Bridge replacement, for example. And you know, that would be a project that it would be perfect for this kind of thing, for the contractor to make a commitment that they would, for example, hire low-income people from the city that the project is located in. You know, Representative Jackson, you're from a small town. Your city council, for example, if they hired a Minneapolis firm to repave all the streets in your community, and they brought in all the workers from somewhere far away from your community, don't you think you'd be hearing from your constituents saying, how come we didn't get those jobs? We're paying for that project. There are streets. It's our community. And how come none of our citizens are getting those jobs? I hear that in my community all the time. You know, frankly, Flatiron came from Colorado. And they brought workers. They brought equipment. They brought all kinds of people from states other than Minnesota to do this humongous job here in our state. And wouldn't it have been wonderful if they were our citizens that got that work, our low-income folks who lived in that city, maybe some of the offenders who are coming out of prison who need a restart in their lives. And that's what this kind of job would do, this kind of bill would do, these kinds of jobs would bring that kind of work. And the idea that somebody is standing in the way of that, I just have a really hard time with.
Commissioner, if you would mind sticking around for a little bit. Members, we're going to recess for about 10 minutes. Representative Hanstrom would like to talk to her members, and I'd like to have a chance for the Senate members to have a chance to chat with this a little bit and talk with Senator Higgins, and then we'll come back. But we're going to recess for about 10 minutes.
Thank you.